Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security. And today I'm joined by CIS's Identity and Access Management expert, Daniel McIntyre. Daniel, how are you, sir?
Good, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Thank you. So what we're meeting for, what we're doing today, is we're reviewing Identity and Access Management in alignment with the National Cybersecurity Alliance's Identity Management Day. And so ultimately, the second Tuesday of April is a day to educate business leaders, IT decision makers, and the public about the importance of identity management. And no better person here at CIS to answer these questions and help us on our path to better identity management than Daniel. So Daniel, how about you introduce yourself, your role here at CIS, and your experience?
So as you said, my name's Daniel McIntyre. I've been with CIS since January of 2023. Before that, I spent 26 years in banking across credit card fraud, information security, business continuity, identity and access management, mobile device management, data loss prevention, data governance, and privacy. If it was a back-end function, you know, aside from mortgage, I probably did it at the bank, basically. But when I got the chance to focus solely on IAM, you know, here at CIS, who hasn't heard of CIS, right? So I jumped that chance to make the move over here.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we've certainly benefited from those years of experience and being able to apply those really true security concepts, privacy, and all of those elements that you mentioned to our own internal program, which has been fantastic. So, Daniel, when we think about identity management, how has that concept in your mind changed over the years?
It's changed a lot. I mean, when I started in IAM, my first foray into it was having a foot and a half stack of computer paper dumped on my desk from an AS400 report saying, we need you to figure out, you know, what roles people should have. So we've come a long way since then. But, you know, now it's not just an IT function of, you know, I need access to this and I need access to that. It's a governance program that's become very advanced technologically, you know, multi-factor authentication. We have our own IAM applications to control access to the various systems you need, you know, biometrics, you know, fingerprint readers, facial recognition. So all of that has evolved, you know, mobile devices, the Internet of Things, cloud computing, you know, some people might think of those as you know, challenges or headaches or, oh, here comes some, you know, another thing I have to figure out. But that's really helped put IAM to the forefront because it's helped people, you know, your office isn't just where you go for 8 hours a day anymore. You can work anywhere from anything, you know, from the, you know, little computer in your pocket to your laptop. And that's really a shift in not only how we work, but, you know, people's concepts of IAM and how important it is. It's helped it move from, you know, being a gatekeeper to being more of a collaborative partner, I guess you would say, to enable the businesses to work the way they want to.
Oh, 100%. No, I think, as you mentioned, you know, it's gone from a kind of A to B, as it were, in terms of those old transactions that you'd mentioned to now it's A through every letter of the alphabet hex. And, you know, it's just trying to then figure out the right path of role is incredibly challenging. And ultimately, that's one of the questions here is, you know, what are those current challenges that you face in the modern environment with, you know, that the fall walls have necessarily been removed and ultimately the world is access, any device is access now. So what challenges do you currently see now in 2024?
Surprisingly enough, a lot of the challenges that I see in IAM haven't really changed. You know, there's still, you know, things like the constant change in the environment. You've got your joiners, movers, leavers. You've got people that needed access to ABC yesterday, and they need access to, you know, X, Y, and Z today. That is still the same and is a challenge that everybody still faces. Striking the right balance between company needs and security, and, you know, I want to tighten everything down so that, you know, no data goes anywhere that it shouldn't be, and allowing your users to work, you know, that's also a challenge that hasn't changed over the years, and you still have to learn to strike that balance for your company if you're going to have an effective IAM, you know, program. Legacy systems, that's another one that hasn't changed. It may have changed. I guess they weren't a pain when they first came out, but they weren't legacy then. But how are you going to integrate with them? You know, they didn't have the access controls that you have today. How are you going to mitigate those gaps and lessen the risk for your company to still support those legacy systems that it would be, you know, too costly or too cumbersome to try and get rid of?
Yeah, agreed. One of the things I think when CIS kind of going through its maturation is, you know, people wore many different hats. And now as we've grown as an organization, it's, you know, those are very discrete hats that need to be identified and abstracted into something that, one, you can control. As you mentioned, all of the controls you mentioned, very, very important. And now it gives us an opportunity to both align to practices that speak to that maturation, but then also integrate across a number of different elements. And I think it's that consolidation approach to where we can utilize the technology to maybe make it easier and abstract a position where it gives you more confidence in kind of the, you know, the stayers, the leavers, and the interleavers, as it were, as they enter into the CIS environment, or even change role. That's a, you know, sometimes a unique challenge, given the dynamics of our organization and the ability to move within our organization, which I think is great, but I think it also adds elements of complexity. Is that right, Daniel?
It certainly does. And CIS is not alone, you know, in that we faced it at every company I've worked for. When you have people move jobs, they've been here forever. I mean, just imagine, you know, you were a domain admin and you just suddenly decided you wanted to go over here and, you know, work for a sales position or something like that. I don't know why you'd want to, but yeah, you know, maybe somebody does. And you know, you've got to figure out what that person had access to and realign their access to their new job. You can't just have them go over there with still, you know, the keys to the kingdom. And those are, those occur everywhere, not just here at CIS.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the, if we were to poll, I think, identity and access management professionals, all those, you know, dealing with this on a day-to-day basis, I think, you know, that kind of raises to the top. That becomes an element, as it were, of the challenge. But it also represents a thought here, Daniel, where we're looking at emerging threat, utilizing maybe that complexity that exists as part of their strategy for infiltration to organizations. And so what have you seen in terms of strategies for identity and access management to either compensate or the types of threats that you're seeing that need to be controlled in this space?
Strategies to combat the emerging threats. Gosh, that's, we're always playing catch up. That's the problem with you know, IAM security. We're always one step behind, and there, we may have some really smart people, but there's some really smart people trying to, you know, attack and get in as well. And you just imagine what would happen if we all turned our efforts for good. But, you know, so what we've had to do, you know, what to combat those types of things, you know, biometrics come to mind, you know, fingerprint readers, facial recognition, you know, to replace that old username and password, or to augment the username and password in, you know, with MFA, multi-factor authentication, just, you know, in general, has come along to try and harden the outer walls, I guess you would say. That's probably a dated term, but I've already said I was in banking for 26 years, so you know I'm not a spring chicken. you know, but it's just making the surface harder to attack. It's kind of like, you know, when you think about a house and you want to protect it from being, you know, burgled. You're not going to stop them if they're really determined. You just want to make it hard enough that they go to the next house. So, you know, all of these things that we're talking about that came out to address those threats and you know, being able to have alerts and have automations that occur. So you're not just sending an alert to somebody who might be asleep in the middle of the night. You know, we have systems that are sophisticated enough now to actually look at behavioral responses from our users and respond accordingly. You know, you could not be in New York and 5 seconds later be logging in from around the world. So we need to investigate that. So those types of things have had to adapt to the way we work. And they've been amazingly helpful, I guess you would say, to addressing these types of IAM concerns and attacks that can come in. But the biggest thing is training. Training for your users has always been important. They are out there on the front lines, they're the ones who are going to be attacked. You know, they have to understand not just from a security perspective what to do, but it's very helpful for them to understand why they're doing it. I found that to be the biggest positive impact on advancing an IAM program is, you know, helping your users understand why they're doing it. Why do we have to do this? Why do we have to do it that way? And once they understand, oh my gosh, that could have a really big impact on the company if I went rogue and, you know, went out and signed up for, you know, this SaaS tool and started sending data out there without anybody knowing it. You know, once they understand those types of things, it really helps a lot. So all of those things work together to combat the emerging threats, in my opinion.
Completely agree. No, I think, you know, when we're thinking about best practices for organizations, I think it's, you know, it gets to certain situations where you have to build that awareness, the tolerance, as it were, to understand the attacker mentality as well. You know, they would never attack us, right? You know, that they would never want my credentials. They would never want my level of access. And it's, you know, we've got to abstract that to they do. And ultimately, any weakest link, as it were, into an organization or any assessment type strategy that an adversary would have is we've got to, you know, maintain that level of consistency. And I think that's also a part of the underlying program as well, is being consistent with the approach, you know, starting with the strategy and working through its operationalization and the continued improvement. One of the things, you know, I'd seen, and I'd love to get your comments on as well, Daniel, is you know, we've seen advances in technology. So we could, you know, WebAuthn, OAuth, and, you know, even zero trust principles. Even though you're in the organization, you still have, you know, all of these methods of authentication or increased authentication or escalated authentication into certain processes and structures, you know, all stemming from really an identity approach. And I think it's good, you know, that we're thinking in that way, but I still believe that it comes down to the individual, right? It's their responsibility to do the right thing at the right time, understand. And I use this word, and I don't use it lightly, but it is a privilege to have access to these systems versus where they think, oh, you know, it's a privilege having me here. It's no access to these systems, to this data, to do this type of work. Specifically, you know, I always call that out at CIS, but anywhere, you know, having that responsibility and I think permeates some of these thoughts as to the way we should treat ultimately our methods of identification. It also, you know, gets to password reuse, you know, as don't allow that to permeate, you know, those passwords that you use maybe for your own personal use. Don't allow those to permeate this environment, because data breaches, you know, are a common factor. And the utility in those spaces of password reuse, huge. But now let's use multi-factor, right? So maybe that was the trend 5 years ago. Now let's enforce multi-factor So even if there is, there's another layer of protection. I love your house analogy, because it really is, you know, it's building up the defenses, as it were, and ultimately doing some elements of threat assessment, how advanced, how sophisticated is the adversary, and kind of to meet them in kind. But there is no better best practice in my mind than what you mentioned is we're playing catch up, right? It's the defender's dilemma. In terms of, you know, looking at the new techniques, looking at the vulnerability and the software that we utilize, both from a identity, but, you know, basically a business utility, and strengthening representatively our infrastructure, where the demarcation is, again, as you mentioned, that's everywhere. And what particular device, any device, and it's, you know, opening up new challenges, I think. But as you mentioned, I think underneath all of these challenges, it's been the same for quite a while. It may just be in a new concept or a new technology or a new perspective, maybe. But I'd love to get your thoughts.
Well, I think that was a great way to put it. It makes me think of, you know, I know it's going to seem like a silly analogy, but, you know, if you think of children that grew up, you know, back in the 20s and 30s, they all had toys. And well, we have toys now too, you know, that we use to combat the threats and attackers against us. They're just more sophisticated toys, but we're still the same people. The human element hasn't changed. And that is why I say training is one of the biggest things you can do, because people aren't inherently bad. You know, some companies I've worked with and for, you know, they treated their employees like they made their employees feel like they were the bad guys. They were the awful ones. You know, they're not. Your employees, they inherently want to do good. So training them as to why, because we're not all born with this knowledge. IAM is a simple concept, but I've worked at enough places to know it must not be that simple, or you wouldn't need specialized IAM people like me to try and help you, you know, bring it in-house. I guess people just don't think in those terms day to day. They've got their own jobs to do. So, you know, training really does help there, but you're right. You know, all of these tools that we use are important. If you pitch it in a way of, you know, help, this is how I can help you do your job. This is how I can help you do your job safer. You know, you're not doing this MFA because, oh, it's one more thing you have to do, you know, before you can do your job. This is me helping you be able to do your job from your home office, from your office, from that hotel room. I have logged in from my phone at a bar when there was an incident in the past. You know, I couldn't do that if those weren't in place. So if you help pitch it like that to your users, then it becomes something not that they have to do, but this is what's allowing them to do what they need to do.
Exactly. Exactly. You're enabling them to be more efficient in a lot of cases, and we'd have to do that in a way that has both security principles embedded, but then also the realization, as you mentioned, I love the training piece. I mean, it hits so hard, and especially on, you know, Identity Management Day, is that it is trying to bring that awareness that it's a contributive factor to the foundational elements of any security program. If you can do this right, and the work that you do, doing that right permeates literally every facet of the underlying controls program from an organization. You eliminate so much risk by doing this right. And then, as you mentioned, you also enable that business value generation because you're enabling everybody for secure access. You're enabling them to be able, you know, to have that 24/7 login from anywhere, login from any device. But that can't just be, oh, well, we're going to leave open season, right? And allow you just to do that without any necessitation of a security control and element of, you know, an underlying defense in depth approach. So going to those abstracts, going to those situations, I think it allows us to, you know, utilize that. And I love the way you phrased it, to build that awareness, but then also understand how they contribute to the overall security of the organization by doing these things right. And in a lot of cases, you know, we're trying to give and create the technical guardrails, right? That this is what you can do in these parameters. But as you mentioned, the human element really hasn't changed, right? We're that constant, as it were, that needs to really appreciate. And I think, as you know, as we speak here to business leaders, IT decision makers, and really the general public in these spaces, is it's not to be taken for granted. It may just be, oh, it's just my username and password and, you know, a code that I enter in. It's so much more than that, because it's the enabler into building a foundational control that permeates everything else. Without it, I'm not sure that, Daniel, in a lot of cases, you have a foundation to stand on for any other part of security within an organization. I just think it's fundamental.
You certainly wouldn't have a solid foundation, that's for sure.
Exactly. So, Daniel, as we you know, want to represent thoughts in this space, I think we've, you know, identified protection mechanisms. I think one of the other elements here, though, is to not rely necessarily on one mechanism, but I believe there are combinations that are going to help an organization build defense in depth in this area. Would you agree with that concept?
Definitely. I'm a big advocate of having, you know, a layered approach to pretty much everything. You know, a plan A, B, and C, and maybe D, E, and F, depending on how critical it is for your business. You know, that's applies to not only, you know, security, IAM, business continuity. If it's one of your crown jewels, you need to apply that proper respect and controls and protections around it. So, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one other thing that brings to mind, Daniel, and it may be a touch facetious, but we'll throw it out here, is the failure in identity and access management actually is the enabler of the business continuity, the incident response. The failure in that space is every... It just leads me to, weaknesses in that space lead to the consequences of why we need all these other elements to as responding kind. Again, just a touch facetious, but it's, to be honest, not too far from the truth, right? Is, you know, if we can get this right, or if we do this wrong, ultimately you better have other good defensive, alerting mechanisms, detection controls, protection mechanisms, plans in play, tabletop them, those types of things. Does that make any sense, Daniel?
It does. It does. I mean, anybody who's worked in the industry, any industry, can give you examples. I mean, this bank is no longer around, so, and I'm not going to mention the name, but, you know, when I first started here and got that stack of papers, was told to sort through it, you know, on the surface, it looked like they had designed, you know, role-based access controls. They had like, you know, 25 or 30 roles in their core system. But when you dug into it, every one of those roles had been copied from the God account. So everybody in that company was a, you know, an administrator on the core system, and they wanted to know why files kept disappearing. Yeah. So that fits in perfectly with, you know, what you said. It if it's done wrong, it will be your downfall.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Wonderful. Daniel, I wonder if you could give the audience here, I know we're talking identity management day, but any thoughts on persons looking to build a career in cybersecurity, become more aware of the underlying premises that we've been discussing today? Any suggestions, recommendations based on your experience and your career?
So this is probably going to be a little unorthodox, but so am I. I don't think any one thing defines whether a person's going to be good in cybersecurity. I think it's whether or not they have a drive and a want and a desire to do that type of work. It takes a very specialized person to do that type of work. And cybersecurity is a huge umbrella. It's almost like saying you want to be a doctor. Do you want to be an optometrist? Do you want to be a dermatologist? Do you want to be a podiatrist? You know, so look at your skills, look at what you enjoy doing, and see where that's going to fit within the cybersecurity umbrella. You know, and even once you're there, you know, You want to be a manager? You want to be a director? Do you want to be a project manager? Do you want to be, you know, a security specialist or an analyst? There's just so much. So if somebody has that desire and that drive to do it, they shouldn't ignore it. They should try, you know, because there's so much room under the cybersecurity umbrella. You know, you don't just have to have, this is me, again, my opinion, you don't just have to have, you know, a university degree or a certificate, you know, formal education. I've hired people in the past that, you know, had none of that, but they were self-taught and they were some of my best employees. So, you know, having that desire to make things better, solve problems, help others, you know, and yes, you do have to have some type of technical skills, you know, but, you know, that's why I'm saying, look at those skills, see which one you fit into and how you could bring those skills to the table. You know, connecting with your local groups, like, you know, your local ISACA chapter or your local, you know, other groups like that to get your name out there, you know, that facial recognition, build your network, those types of things would help. And, you know, I know I said, I don't think you need a formal education or certifications, but when you're facing down, you know, the automated tools recruiters use to sift through your resumes and say whether you get to talk to somebody or not, it never hurts to have a few letters after your name. So, you know, find a certification from a reputable group. You know, if you are that interested, that's certainly not going to hurt your chances.
Wonderful. No, that's great. I think I like what you mentioned as well. In some cases, it's always, you know, one of the adages that I've used is, you know, hire for attitude and train for skill in a lot of cases. But it never, like you say, it never hurts having a certification. You're investing in yourself in a lot of cases with, you know, a certification, allowing you to get through those, we'll call it gatekeeper software, as it were, with HR, allows you that next step. And again, as you mentioned, never hurts to join a local chapter, go to one of their meetings, learn, you know, about who the people are in that environment and their recommendations. And, you know, it's in some cases, there's an adage, it's not what you know, but who you know. And in a lot of cases, that networking really does help to, you know, build opportunities. And again, then once the opportunity is presented, then it's up to you. That's where the drive, the desire that Daniel mentioned, that's what really will then delineate you from others in terms of why you, you know, necessarily deserve the role, whether you deserve the position, and making sure that, you know, you keep that position as well. So very important. Thank you, Daniel. That's awesome. Really
great. Having those networks also helps when things go wrong or you're having problems.
Yes.
You know, it's not just to get your foot in the door. That's a lifelong thing to build a group of, you know, other like-minded people, cybersecurity professionals around you. I still reach, you know, out to others all the time. You know, this is happening over here. Are you seeing the same thing? You know, how widespread is this? How did you solve for this problem? Don't just think it's a one and done. It's
yeah. And I you mentioned a really important point there. It's not about taking from that group, but also contribution. So doing podcasts like this, providing something back, writing an article, you know, YouTube video, you've got to, you know, it's a two-way street. So it's not just, oh, I'm going to go to these meetings and get a job. No, it's about what can you contribute? How can you then demonstrate those skills, but also contribute back to cybersecurity? Because we've, you know, as we've been talking, there's still a lot of problems we have, no matter, you know, we've been doing this for a number of years and there's still issues, right? There's still things we need to fix. And, you know, we've all got to contribute. And like Daniel said, it's lifelong relationships that you create in the space. Very important. Your support network, being able to contribute to that in many different ways is vitally important. So excellent point, Daniel. As we conclude, any closing thoughts for the audience on Identity Management Day?
I'll be honest, I had not heard of Identity Management Day before this year. I know it's been out for a couple of years. I think it's wonderful. Of course, identity and access management, you know, is something I'm a little biased towards. But I just think This is a great opportunity to put it out there. I hope people take advantage of it to learn, you know, things that they can do better at their companies, in their personal lives, you know, help someone else in their personal lives. You know, we all have parents or had them at one time. You know, if they're anything like, you know, my family, they're not as technically minded as me, you know, help them out. That way, it's not just, you know, for companies. Identity and access management can be for people on their personal level too. So I think this is wonderful that we're having this discussion, and I appreciate you giving me the time to talk with you about it.
Oh, no. Pleasure's all mine, and for the audience as well. Thank you so much, Daniel. It was great to talk to you, and to our audience as well. Thank you so much. Any thoughts, questions, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. And with that, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.
Heading to RSA Conference 2024? Stop by booth 4319. The CIS team will discuss our cybersecurity resources and tell you about our exciting speaker sessions. You might even get to drop in on a live recording of Cybersecurity Where You Are. Hope to see you there.